straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first on Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 331, brought to you by Hook'em.com, our good friends at Bud Light. Cedric Golden here with Taylor's favorite duck, Kirk Bowles. Jam-packed potty today, duck. We got Mike DeCourcy, longtime Sporting News, Yahoo, basketball, football. He does it all. He's going to come in and break down the Final Four coming up. No Texas in the Final Four, of course.
Texas didn't make it?
They didn't make it, Duck. They make it, Duck. They didn't make it. Women I had making it, they didn't make it, Duck.
Came close.
But before we get to all of that, we are at the midway point of our favorite part of the season. Spring football, all over spring football. And, man, it's going by so fast, Kirk. I mean.
Flying. You hate when the fun moments fly by.
We just don't document them enough, man.
No, we don't.
We're going to be like, we just didn't take enough photos from spring football. But
right. Only what, 8 more practices and the spring game on the 20th coming.
Yeah, I'll be the first to say I'll never be more ready for the spring orange-white game than I am right now, Duck. I'm on pins and needles on the edge of this seat. Waiting.
You're so fragile.
There are some storylines, fam. I love the Arch Manning looks big and bulky. Quinn Ewers is 205 and says he's gonna get to 210, and a whole new bevy of receivers that he's got to throw to. I like my cousin Matthew Golden. I think Matthew Golden's gonna be a player on this team. 76 catches in the last 2 seasons with Houston. That receiver one spot, Duck, is wide open. We don't know who's going to step up.
Well, who's your money on?
Man, I think Isaiah Bond. You know, and I love, you know what, I love Jonte Cook, but I just feel like he's going to be more of a deep option for them, and I don't know that he's going to be a volume catcher of the ball, but I think Bond and Golden, for right now, we're talking about the spring because of that. When Silas Bolden rolls in here from Oregon, then we might have something because that's
he's a slot guy. He's a smaller guy. He's a slot guy.
Yeah, he's going to catch a lot of passes, you know.
Yeah, but you're talking about the alpha dog, you know, an X or an A.D. Mitchell.
Is there an alpha dog in this group, Doug?
I think there might be. I agree with you. I think Isaiah Bond could be that guy. You know, the last time they got a transfer receiver from an SEC school, worked pretty good. And if Bond is anywhere close to A.D. Mitchell, I mean, they've got a real find in there. So, yeah, we need to see some separation, and we'll see that in the next couple of weeks in the spring game on the 20th. I asked Sark Tuesday if any of the freshmen are standing out and not looking like freshmen.
Yeah, nothing.
And, well, no, he had something at the end. He said, well, it's too early to for them to assert themselves as leaders, but they got so much on their plate. But he said, keep an eye on Ryan Wingo. He's going to have an impact, and you can already start to see his size and speed and athleticism. You know, he's the 5-star receiver coming in, along with 4-star Parker Livingstone. So they have a lot of options, but sure sounds like Wingo's going to be in that rotation somehow.
Is it the most talented receiving core in the history of Texas football? Don't play that card again, Bowles.
You're such a hater. You know, I'm trying to be positive here, and you're always raining on the parade. You know, just
you said that. You said it, fam. I didn't say it.
I know. I was.
What did I tell you? They got too many receivers.
No, they didn't. They played too many.
And then when Tom Herman whittled that thing down to 4 wideouts, then they started winning. They went one of Sugar Bowl.
He didn't whittle it down fast enough. We know that. So, but I don't think we have that problem with Sark, and that's one reason you see an Isaiah Nayor and Kasey Kahne, transferring, because they kind of know they're not thought of well enough to be in that rotation. So, but
I hated it for Nayar, especially because
yeah, we never saw him.
never saw him. We went to that one practice and he showed out. He caught two long balls, and I go, man, they're gonna be good.
Yeah, I liked
Really
him.
good, because he can get deep, and he just never got a chance. He never
Yeah,
got a chance.
he never did, and it's a shame, and that happened. So, but like you say, Jonte Cook, DeAndre Moore, Matthew Golden, Bond, Bolden, the freshman coming in, they got some talent there. They got some talent. So that's probably one of the things that we'll probably look forward to the most on the 20th. We also talked, Sark, about priorities, and what he thinks they need to kind of fix, in the spring ball.
Here's what he said.
I would have said coming through practice, after practice five, I would have said the run game. I was like, man, we got it. We need to get going. And then the last two practices, the run game has really started to come to life. And so that's been definitely encouraging. And I would probably have said the same thing, just kind of about the consistency in the passing game. But the last two practices, that has shown up. And so I just think that that's a little bit offensively of the byproduct of those guys working through base installation and then finding rapport, run timing, but also rapport, quarterback, receivers, tight ends. Naturally, defensively, it's tough to tell because we're not tackling as much, but naturally, we want to get more balls out on the ground. We've created a few interceptions, but naturally, one area that I know we want to really improve upon this season is creating those turnovers. And so that's always a challenge there. And then when I tell you that the run game is getting better on offense, well, I think we need to shore some things up run defense-wise, right? If the run game's starting to come to life offensively, then where are the issues defensively? That why is that occurring?
The run defense, not a shock considering what they just lost. Big Sweat,
No.
B. Murphy, Fat Mac is what his family calls him, Byron Murphy the second. Those are NFL tackles, and they're going to get tested. You know they're going to get tested, right up the gut. And then you got Jalen Ford, who was right in the middle. Is David Benda and young Anthony Hill going to be able to hold it down at Mike? So definitely a huge concern. Now, of the three things he said, that was the one that stood out the most to me, Doug.
Yeah, because it was just a given they were going to stop the run last year. They were so good against the run and on third down defense that you didn't worry about it. You kind of just checked that box before every game, and now they don't have that luxury. So it's not going to surprise me at all if they still get an interior defensive lineman or two in the transfer portal, before it's
They need a grown man in there.
they do.
I like Alfred Collins, and I like Vernon Broughton, but that's there's they were just part of the rotation.
They're
There's
not
definite drop
stars.
off, and those are not alpha. I don't think those are alpha dogs in the middle, and so he's gonna have to find a junior or senior guy that can come in, plug and play, because he's going to need four or five guys in that middle.
He is, and maybe the Arizona kid's going to be one of them. Maybe they get a couple more out of the portal. Maybe some of these freshmen, come along and start to contribute. So the other thing he mentioned was turnovers. They always want to create more turnovers, and they were I think 30th in turnover margin last year, plus six,
That's really
which was
good.
good, but it wasn't like
Right.
a Georgia, or a USC. I remember USC was like plus 20 at one point, and not that it helped them very much on defense, but he said they're getting interceptions like they did last year, but they're not getting the balls on the ground, and he wants to create more fumbles. And they need more DJ stripping the ball with his signature move, and we haven't seen that since Derek Johnson. And So that's a big issue he's looking for the rest of the spring drills too.
He likes the run game. He likes C.J. Baxter. He likes Jade Auburn.
And he mentioned Trey Wisner, the sophomore kid, and he was a big contributor on special teams. They get 8 tackles total, but played on a lot of them, and really sees him kind of asserting himself. So he might even be in that Keelan Robinson mode, Sark said on Tuesday. So, but one thing he said, he loves this depth. He said, we're 4 deep at every position. And not many coaches can say that.
I know he couldn't say it when he got here.
No, he sure couldn't. I couldn't say it last year as far as 4 deep, but
true. That's a lot, man. That's
he's got
lot.
It rolling.
Well, it's gonna be fun. Orange White game is gonna be April 20th, and we're gonna be out there probably 5 deep. We're sending the whole crew like we did the Sugar Bowl, Duck. Hadn't been anywhere since. But anyway, speaking of things we didn't get to travel to, NCAA basketball. Of course the men got knocked out in the second round by Hickory, Tennessee. Not a shock. That's what we expected. But Duck, help is on the way. We both watched the McDonald's All-American game, and Lefty Trey Johnson. He looked
Look
good.
good.
Look
He
good.
looks spectacular at
Six
times.
six guard
Yeah.
with hops and a sneaky deep range on the three. 6 out of 9 from distance. Duck, they need that. They need that so bad. They remember we were talking. We loved us some Max Aismas, just a super kid, a great find from Rodney Terry. After they lost AJ Johnson and Ron Holland, but wasn't enough because when you lose that kind of talent, but they need a big guard. How many times during the season, Kirk, did we say, "Boy, they really miss Marcus Carr. They miss a
All
big
the time.
guard who can make shots."
And this kid's bigger. This kid's
Bigger
6'6",
than
you know.
Marcus Carr. He's not as thick, Doug.
No,
He's
he's not
not
thick.
thick.
He's very lean at 6'6", and you'd like to see a little more muscle on him. But like you said, he was 6'9", hit 5 threes, and took the last shot. You know, they dropped the play for Trey Johnson to take the last shot against the East, and his form looked great, and it looked a little bit online. I thought he was gonna hit it and be the hero of the moment. But you're right. And the other thing, besides needing that pure shooter outside, remember they were so short with Max and even Tyrese Hunter.
Tyrese,
And we
those
don't
are
know
little
if Tyrese
guys.
Hunter's coming back. So to have a 6'6" guy you can plug in there, that's a big hit. So yeah. He looked good. He looked good. I was impressed with him.
The women, man, they're Duck. It makes you
Right.
think that if Rory Harmon played all season long and
Yeah.
Madison was at the two, would they I got to be real here. After watching Iowa and LSU, it was going to be tough. And it was South Carolina brought. It was going to be tough either way. UConn with
Sure.
8 buckets, even if they had survived that North Carolina State blitz, it was going to be tough either way for the Texas Longhorn women to advance again. Because man. Duck, if I'm telling you, if that wasn't some of the best basketball I've seen, that women's Elite Eight Monday night was just wonderful. Caitlin Clark is the truth, Duck. She is the truth. I don't care how you slice it. She's got to be dealt with. And Mulkey drew up a better defense for the hit piece than she did for Caitlin Clark. Why do you got little Haley Van Lith on Caitlin? What was Flaw J?
And she didn't adjust on that either. And I mean, I think the numbers were, it drew 12.6 million, which was even more than the 9.9 million Iowa and LSU drew in the title game last year. And
There you go.
it peaked at 16 million, said. I mean,
Ladies are alive. They're here.
lot of eyeballs,
They're
you
here.
know. And those are like NFL numbers. That's how popular it was. And I know things didn't go well in Portland. They had a lot of gaffes and debacles with hotels and 3-point lines and the
Sending people
national
to
anthem
Idaho to
coming.
get slurred.
Yeah, it was not a well-run tournament, but hopefully NCAA does better in the future. But there's no denying the women's game is ascending, it's rising, and the trick will be to capitalize on that and keep it, you know, surging. I asked Vic this week. I said, "So who's the next Caitlin Clark?" And he said, "Well, I don't know." He said, "Hopefully some girl, you know, dribbling and shooting threes in her driveway, because she's going to inspire a lot of
Going
young
to,
ladies."
going
Yeah.
to, she already
No,
has.
and but some of that are that we don't even heard of. They may be 6 years old right now.
You know
So she
what
was an
though?
inspiration.
And the thing I love, and Caitlin Clark, you know, and Caitlin Clark was that little girl going to
She
women's
was.
basketball
No,
games.
and I love the videos.
Loved her some Maya Moore. Maya
Yeah.
Moore, the UConn legend, came through Iowa, and Caitlin Clark's parents took her to the game, and she ran up and hugged Maya Moore and ran off. And she's just another kid hugging her hero. And the State Farm people got with ESPN, and they got Maya Moore and Caitlin together. And Caitlin went all fangirl. She was just blown away. And she's still that little girl who loves basketball. And I love good ball played on any level. If the little dribblers are making threes and making shots, I'm in there. Because basketball is my first. I just love that sport. But she has inspired a lot of people, as has Angel Reese, as has Flauge Johnson, as has Kate Beckers. Yeah. As has Saniya Rivers. And who was the girl that lit? Was
James,
Zion.
Zaya James.
James, those girls lit up, as has Madison Booker and Rory Harmon. It's growing, Doug. Juju Watkins is getting commercials. And so they got stars, whereas the men have really good teams and a few stars. But the women's stars have taken center stage. And Doug, I'm going to tell you, I'm just as excited about the women's Final Four as I am about the men's, even though my bracket
No,
is crap.
no. I'm more excited. I'm more excited about the women. I mean,
I
I
know.
think UConn could run roughshod in the men's Final Four, but the women's game, who knows? You know, you and Danny made fun of me because I picked UConn, you know, a couple of weeks ago. And I don't know, didn't you pick South Carolina?
I picked South Carolina, but I had UConn in my Final Four. I know my
Oh,
if I
yeah.
got out of women's bracket, it would have been way better than the men, but I did have Texas in my Final Four, so I
Yeah.
wouldn't have gotten it there. But I still had them,
But it's,
I still had them all the way to Elite Eight too. So
I
my
like
bracket
what
would
you,
have been nice.
I like what you said. I mean, they just got star power so much more than the men. And like, that's what I hope keeps going, that the NCAA and the media will all get our act together and give them more exposure and attention that they deserve. I really do. So, like, it's been a phenomenal women's tournament. Men's tournament has been good. You know, you had your moments, you know, Oakland being one of them, Kentucky losing, that hurt us big time, our
That killed
brackets.
us. That killed
You
us.
know, Samford, they kind of got robbed, but yeah, it's going to be an intriguing men's tournament, but the women's tournament is going to kind of captivate the nation.
Well, let's get to our only guest today. He's
Okay.
got, I know he's got a little something to say.
On Second Thought.
Kirk, I don't know why it took so long to get this guy on our podcast. I mean, 331 episodes till we get Mike DeCourcy, one of the preeminent basketball writers in the country. This is his 34th Final Four, and that's about 30 more than me. But I'm not keeping score. He just landed in Phoenix and is graciously giving us some time when he's got way better things to do. Mike, how are you, man?
I am doing great, Cedric. Great to see you. Great to see you too, Kirk.
Man, this is awesome. It's good catching up with you. So, hey, I want you to clarify a rumor for me. I know there's a women's Final Four coming, and there's a rumor the men are going to have a Final Four as well this weekend.
Yes.
I want you to
Yes.
clarify that.
Yes, there will be a men's Final Four here in Glendale, Arizona at the State Farm Stadium. And it will be interesting. I don't know yet that it'll be competitive. I think some of that is up to whether Alabama can conceive a game plan that works against UConn, and then subsequently whether NC State or Purdue can, maybe. We'll see.
Yeah.
I suspect that UConn will leave here with another trophy, but I do give Purdue, if they are the team that is the opposition, I do give them a chance. I don't believe that NC State can win. I don't expect Alabama to win, although I will open the door for the idea that, I don't know, they could make 25 threes or something like that.
You got to be open to that.
Yes.
Exactly. I
Because
want
they'll try them. I mean, they'll shoot them.
to.
They don't have much choice.
They
You know,
have
that
to.
the whole three and layup thing is great in theory if you're making threes and if Donovan Clingan isn't in there to erase all the layups, because we saw Illinois have a lot of trouble with that second.
Did we
He's an
ever?
octopus, man. I wanted to ask you, Kirk and I have talked about this. The women's tournament is just teeming with star power. There's so many stars. But there are some intriguing personalities in the men's tournament, this Final Four. DJ Burns Jr. has captured the imagination of a country. For fellow fat guys out there, that used to play ball, I love his feet, and I just love his personality. What do you think about him? I don't think he's an NBA player, but is this one of those things where let's just enjoy the ride and watch this big guy work?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things that I love about it's interesting to me as someone who's covered college athletics for a long time, and they were never allowed to have the athletes during all that time were not allowed to have endorsements. And now you're seeing that they are permitted to do that, and you're seeing how much interest there is. I turn on my television and there's Caitlin Clark in commercial after commercial, and now Juju Watkins is getting commercial
Joel
after
Embiid,
commercial. And DJ Burns, I read today that he has made six figures since
what?
the ACC tournament, which
Wow,
is wonderful. I mean,
good for him.
the fact that they constricted that all of those years is really it's really disappointing. I never understood why that was necessary. I never was one who thought the athletes were getting a terrible deal, but as the compensation for those around them exploded and theirs was still constrained, I found that pretty hard to defend. And so now you're seeing there's a demand for those athletes. There is a significant demand, and I love what the DJ Burns is being able to take advantage of that. Really bright young man. Such an intelligent basketball player, has worked so hard at his game to have the touch he has, to have the vision he has. That's a lot of hard work that goes into that. And he's a, like I said, a really bright young man, very entertaining, very funny. At least until they tip off on Saturday, he'll be the star attraction at this Final Four. He'll be the one everybody wants to talk to because he's got so much to say and he's such an interesting character.
He has
And
a
you know, the whole
smile that just lights up
he does,
all
he
around.
does. And you know, this is how a lot of people intended the NIL. Like you said, DJ Burns has made this since the ACC tournament, not as a recruiting inducement. Caitlin Clark's been at Iowa 4 years and now she's on a State Farm commercial. So I think a lot of coaches and fans and me and the media appreciated them getting their due, you know, with stuff like this, as opposed to, you know, just recruiting bait, you know, come to my school.
Unfortunately, Kirk, they had opportunities to put that in place, and it may never have come to being a recruiting inducement if the other guidelines had been put in place, it may never
Right.
have come to that. But they avoided that at every opportunity,
They
and
did.
most poignantly in 2014, when the Ed O'Bannon case was certified for trial, The attorneys who represented the O'Bannon class called or wrote or however they do it with lawyers, contacted the NCAA and said, "We want to have a settlement conference. We want to explain to you what we want to have done." And of course, some of it would have been some money for the class, but a lot of it would have been, let's put some rules in place so that the next group of athletes don't go through what the O'Bannon group did. And the NCAA refused to even take the meeting. They didn't even want to hear it. And then they got their tails kicked at trial, and then they got their tails kicked in the Alston case, and they continued to lose just about every time they go to court. And it all could have been the way you described the ideal, but it won't ever be that now
No.
because they didn't move when they could have, and the states beat them to it.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's they nobody but themselves to blame.
and given the chance to be a regulatory body, they tucked tail and ran and let the states take the bait, take the heat. And so what you ended up with was 52 different sets of rules when you could have had one. Yeah,
Yes.
that's on them.
And now
It
they're
is.
begging Congress to bail them out, which is not going to happen either. So I don't want to get too far off on that, but it's like, we mentioned Burns and obviously Zach Edey and Kling in there. It's nice to see the big men show up in the college game a little bit. Is that any kind of trend, or is this just kind of an outlier, Mike?
No, I think it is a trend, and it stems from the fact that the NBA has morphed into a game that is very perimeter oriented. Now, there are certainly players like Nikola Jokic and Joel Embiid that can play in that game and dominate and excel, but the typical college big man isn't that player. Luka Garza from a couple of years ago at Iowa. He was much like DJ Burns, a dominant low post player, but not really someone that was super adept at defending ball screens. And so as a result of that, we've seen more college big men stay in school longer and grow as players and become outstanding, as Luka was. His junior and senior year was magnificent. And then Zach Edey is somewhat similar, although there is a body of thought in the NBA that believes that because he's worked so hard on his body and because he's so skilled and because he's so enormous, that there might be a place for him as a primary rotation player, whether it's as a change up in the second group that you see in NBA games, the second quarter group, or whether he can morph into a significant starter, develop into a significant starter, still to be seen. But a year ago, there weren't very many people who thought that was possible. But when they started seeing this Zach Edey, then you started to see attitudes change. It's not going to be universal. There are going to be teams in the league saying, "No way." But as they've always said, you only need one that believes you can do it.
You know what, the thing that they don't talk about as much, and we know it's a factor, Mike, is they didn't ask Shaquille O'Neal to close out on 3-point shooters, or Hakeem, or Patrick Ewing. Those guys just patrol the paint and block shots. But with the advent of these big guys, these which who would have been centers in our day, who are now stretch fours, that's taxing for a Zach Edey, even with that wingspan, to try to chase down a 3-point shooter. So the team that gets him is going to have to understand that they've got to find the right situation for him and not expect him to be closing out in the corners and on the perimeter, because that's just not his bag.
But I do think it'll be interesting to see whether or not, I mean, he's worked really hard on his body and he's become much more mobile. And he doesn't get used in a lot of hard hedges as a ball screen defender because it's not what makes sense for Purdue. But I think there's a belief that he might be able to do that. Now, again, he's not going to be closing out on, like you said, stretch fours. But if he's playing against the Jokic or an Embiid, can he stay in that screen? And I can't promise that he can. But I think there's a belief among some in the NBA that he can. And whereas a year ago, no one believed he would be a first round pick, I continue to see, and I haven't done any of the work on this myself, but I continue to see ESPN, Jonathan Givony, who has covered the draft for nearly 20 years and who has a ton of contacts through himself, through Woj, at ESPN. And he continues to insist he's late lottery, you know, borderline lottery. And I just don't believe that he's doing that because he loves Zach Edey. His reputation is there, and someone that he's trusting is telling him that they believe in Zach. Yeah. And so I think there's a very good chance that he'll have an opportunity to maybe, to an extent, redefine the modern big man spot, because his style was thought to be extinct.
Yeah,
people thought Yao Ming, the next Yao Ming, wouldn't be able to play in the NBA. I think he's much more mobile than Yao was, and he's been healthy too. That's another thing. He's never had health problems.
Yeah,
feet, legs. He's never had health problems.
Bless him.
He's gotten banged up, but he's never had significant issues. So I think that helps him going into the league as well.
You know, it's interesting too. He played 39 minutes in Sunday's game, and I think he's played 35 minutes or more in like six games since mid-February. So let's talk about UConn a little bit. I mean, their run that they're on, I mean, that 30-0 run against Illinois was just mind-blowing. I don't remember seeing anything ever close to that in a tournament. What's going on at UConn? Is Dan Hurley just so far ahead of everybody and the best coach in the game?
Well, he's certainly at this point doing a phenomenal job. I think what's most remarkable and not talked about enough, and we selected him as the Sporting News Coach of the Year, and I'm surprised that more entities aren't doing that, because they were champions a year ago, but what people are overlooking is that they lost 75% of the scoring from last year's championship team.
Right.
I can tell you, I have not gone back all the way to every repeat champion. I haven't looked at the numbers on Oak State, Kentucky, and San Francisco. But since UCLA, their repeat championship, no one's ever lost 75% scoring and then come back and won it again. UCLA turned over three times, or twice, I should say, from Jabbar to Wicks to Walton. And they lost chunks of scoring, and certainly, especially when they lost Kareem and Sid, but they never lost 75%. Florida had they had everybody back in 06, 07 and added significant talent to that. In this case, you're talking about what is basically almost a completely different team. They still have Tristan Newton, who started at point guard. They still have Klingon, who was a backup big. They still have Alex Caravan, who was the starting stretch four for them. But 75% of their scoring, multiple NBA players, and they're honestly better. They are more dominant than they were a year ago.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Go ahead, Ted. You ranked on Fox Sports, you ranked your Final Four teams in order of, you know, who you think the best. UConn, Purdue, NC State, Alabama. Are we just waiting for the heavyweight clash? This little appetizer. You don't see anything monumental happening. You don't see a Villanova-esque upset happening in the semis, do you?
I don't think that UConn is going to lose. I don't expect that. The only scenario in which UConn loses to me is a scenario in which Alabama just goes, I mean, like record setting. Three-point crazy. That's the only scenario in which I see a UConn loss. With NC State and Purdue has to operate against a defense that is allowing no one to make shots. Louisville, in the first game of the ACC tournament, shot over 50% from three. Louisville of all teams, I can't explain that. But since then, no one has even shot 35. And most teams haven't even broken 30 against the NC State defense from three-point range. So Purdue is going to have to make sure that they can accumulate enough points. Now, Zach Edey certainly has shown that he can do a big chunk of that, scored 40-plus in the Tennessee game on Sunday. But they're going to have to find a way to score enough. And we'll have to see how DJ Burns is able to hold up in terms of not fouling. What approach do they take? Does he give him some room? That's the thing that I've noticed in the Utah State game, the Gonzaga game, and the Tennessee game, is that no one gives him room. Everybody fights him, and they all get called for fouls because they're fighting. And when he gets the ball, and they're fouling him, so no one's giving him space. I don't know whether NC State would take that approach. And the other thing that no one is doing, no one zones them, and I'm shocked by that. I'm shocked that no one has tried to zone them, given the challenge of having to deal with Edie. Why not try something different?
And NC
Maybe it's
State's not
just
very deep, are they? They're not. They don't play a lot of players, do they?
he has shortened his rotation down to about eight guys, and the eighth player, Miles Colvin, I think he's the eighth, doesn't play a ton unless he comes out and busts a bunch of threes. He's usually only in there to provide some energy, to provide some rest. But they play about seven and a half guys now. They have other guys they can use. Ethan Morton can come off the bench. He's played a lot of basketball, doesn't score great. Caleb Furst has played a lot of basketball and doesn't play at all now. So they have guys they can use if they have to, but they'd rather not have to.
Last question. And we'll let you go, Mike. Tournament expansion. Do you think it's inevitable, or are they just going to add some play-in games, or what do you think is going to happen there?
I'm afraid it's inevitable, probably to 72.
I
I
can go
don't
with
think
that.
that's a good idea, guys, because I'm doing these brackets. This is my fifth year now. Of course, in the first of those years, there was no tournament. But in those 5 years, you can see what's on the other side of the line. And in most years, it's not very pretty. This year was different because you had the bids, what we call the bid stealers. You had NC State get in. They weren't supposed to. They weren't qualified without an automatic bid. Florida Atlantic lost to, and UAB gets in. They wouldn't have made it. Duquesne, et cetera. We had, I think, four of them, maybe five. New Mexico is another. And so what that did was it compressed the field, and some teams that ordinarily would have gotten in did not. Maybe Seton Hall, maybe St. John's, maybe Pitt, maybe Indiana State would have made it in an ordinary year. But most years, those teams are already in. And then what you're looking at is NC State at 18 and 15, with almost no quality wins. That doesn't excite anybody, but it excites the conference commissioners. Here's what I would say. Here's what I would say to Greg Sankey if he were sitting here, or to Jim Phillips if he were sitting here. Just let it play out for a year or two. If you're good, you're going to get your bids. If you're not good, you're not going to get bids. It's really that simple. The Big Ten, and they start this stuff about, oh, we play too many league games. That's the ACC's excuse. The Big Ten started playing 20 games, I believe, in 2019. They got eight bids. They would have had 10 in 2020 if there had been a tournament. They got nine, nine, eight, all with 20 games. And then they got six. You know why? Because they weren't as good. It was that simple. They
It
just
happens.
they weren't as good. And so they got what they deserved, which was six. And that's so why do you have to manufacture bids for these leagues to vacuum up just because the leagues are getting bigger? I've spoken to people who are very involved in the process, and they're saying, look, we're willing to redefine it so that if you're in a league like the new SEC or like the new Big Ten, we'll understand if you have more losses than maybe you did in the past. So let's see how it looks before we
Just
go
play.
and change something that is literally perfect.
Doesn't need drastic
It
change,
doesn't,
obviously.
because it's the one event in American sports that has never disappointed us.
No.
It
And
is
it won't.
always an A. I mean,
The other thing about that, guys, is that people complain about the college basketball regular season not having enough appeal, or I think that's an overstatement, but you're not going to make it more appealing by making it so that anybody that can bounce the ball three times without knocking it off their foot gets in the tournament. You're not,
don't.
you know, people are just going to say, well, I'll just turn it on in March, because, or maybe even the second or third round in March, because I know that team's not very good. So why would I watch them? I mean, that's what they're That's what they're opening up the possibility of. Instead of looking at the fact that that drama over the last 2 or 3 weeks creates interest in their last regular season games, in their conference tournaments, there's real drama. What NC State did when they played Carolina and everybody knew they had to win that game, that's drama.
It's many major drama.
If you have sports without drama, you know what you have, guys? We're watching people exercise. If I go to the gym, I can watch people exercise and I can get exercise myself.
What's a
I'd
gym?
rather see drama. That's what makes sports special.
What's a
Absolutely.
gym? Go pound on a table somewhere, Mike, and say, "We
Yeah,
don't need this change. We don't want it. We're happy as is, status quo." So, man, thank you so much. And it's been a delight. We appreciate you being with us, sparing some time.
check
My
him out
pleasure,
on
guys.
Fox Sports. He's on television. Read his stuff on the sporting news and follow him on Twitter at TSN Mike. Mike DeCourcy, we appreciate you very much. Have fun in the desert, and we'll catch up again sometime next season, my friend.
Sounds great.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
Chuck, what a great podcast today. Jam-packed, huge. Thanks to our friend Mike DeCourcy for coming in and giving us a primer on Final Four weekend, dropping some knowledge on NIL, all over Texas spring football, spring game, Orange White coming up on April 20th. And a big shout out to our producer, Chandler Hoffley, who makes it all work. That's going to do it for episode 331 of On Second Thought. For the Duck Kirk Bowles, I'm Seth Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.